Joshua Pet Ghost. Tell me about your Dachshund.
Yes, she was a miniature Dachshund named Nellie, and after she died, I started hearing her whimpering and making little barking sounds around the house, and at first I thought this has got to be my imagination because I was so used to hearing her. I figured that if there was some, you know, creak in the house or the refrigerator door squeaked or something like that, that I was just misinterpreting it because that's what my brain was expecting to hear. And then I also would hear what sounded like her little toenails scampering across the floor. But it wasn't until my fiance started hearing the same thing, and I didn't mention it to her because Nellie was her dog before we met, and I didn't want to bring it up. But she came to me and told me she was hearing the same thing. That's when I decided to do something that I rarely do. You see, I enjoy investigating haunted houses, but I don't want to live in one, so very seldom do I break out my equipment in my own house to see what's going on. But I did in this case. I took out my equipment, and sure enough, it didn't take very long for me to start documenting these energy fields, both electromagnetic and electrostatic in nature, that were perfectly suited to the dimensions of Nellie, moving back and forth right along the pathways that she traveled most often in life. I was never able to get an image of her. It may be she was just too small and didn't have enough energy. I don't know. But I was so amazed by seeing how consistently her field was traveling back and forth that it sort of set me on a journey, you could say, exploring the history of these ghost animals and ghostly animals. And I was amazed by the fact that I've read every book that I can find on the subject. And before this book, Pet Ghost, I have never seen a book that is comprehensive enough to give both personal experiences and the history and theories as to what may be happening here, and practical tips on how you can investigate and observe these phenomena for yourself. And actually, the book's title may be a bit misleading because even though it's called Pet Ghosts, I mean, I explored everything from microorganisms all the way up to the fringes of creatures that we may or may not even classify as animals, like Bigfoot or Mothman or the Loch Ness Monster.
All right, we'll talk about that too. Do you believe in reincarnation, Joshua?
I do believe that reincarnation makes sense. And, you know, I always, as many scientific researchers are, I'm always wary of the idea of belief because that implies that you accept something without evidence. But reincarnation does make sense to me, and I think there is some evidence for it.
The reason why I bring that up, is it possible that when a soul is reincarnated, that perhaps it can come back in an animal body? I mean, can your pet dog be, you know, have a soul of what was a human being the time before?
I think that that's perfectly plausible. I mean, you know, when you put humans and animals under a microscope, there is no blatant difference between the two of us. You know, I've been criticized in particular by some people of faith who say, well, how dare you imply that an animal could have a soul or a spirit like a human? Well, we are superior to them. Well, right off the bat, you don't necessarily have to have a soul or a spirit, however you define those terms, to produce a ghost. I mean, we have ghosts of ships and cars and stage coaches as well as the horses pulling them. But beyond that, I mean, I don't see that we have any reason to believe, from what we can observe, there is some great difference physically and physiologically between humans and animals. And really, if you want to stretch it, there's not a huge amount of difference between us and plants. I mean, we're all mainly empty space and water, frankly. So I do think that there is some reason to think or believe that, you know, when we die, whatever this energy we have that is left over is recycled and can come back in any carbon-based life form.
I've got a lab puppy back home at St. Louis, and a smart little thing. And, you know, when you look at her, you just know that there's something beyond just, you know, an animal. There's just there's intelligence. There's emotion. There's love in this animal. You can tell. You can feel it. It's there. And I've always wondered just what is their spirit like? What is that energy force that is part of the universe? And, you know, the more I talk with experts like you and put together some of my own thoughts and theories, yeah, I'm convinced it is possible that souls can reincarnate and come back, you know, in other life forms.
Well, at the very least, if we look at the law of conservation of energy, you know, stating that energy cannot be created nor destroyed, simply conserved and transferred into another form, I mean, at very least, even if a person is a complete, you know, has a complete atheistic Newtonian mindset and says, you know, there is no creation from some spiritual perspective, and that everything that dies is gone, and there is no memory or personality that retains itself, even those people surely must accept the fact that whatever energy that we did possess before we died goes back to the universe and is recycled in some form. And so from there, I mean, it's just a matter of how much meaning you apply to these recycled forms. But I agree entirely. And the more we observe animals, the more we see them acting like humans. Now, you always hate to personify animals too much because they are not like us directly in every way. But still, like you said, there is an essence there, which is something that sort of goes beyond words. It's just like I can't prove with a meter that I feel such a thing as love or hate. Or, you know, you can prove that there are certain electrical signals and things that you might be able to associate with those. But altogether, there are certain things we have to sense as one living creature to another that transcends what we can do with our technology. And I certainly think that there's no reason to believe that the energy we have cannot end up with another life form.
Why are they coming back, Joshua?
Well, you know, right off the bat, if you look at just the pet part, because, you know, again, the book goes into a much wider range, but let's look at pets specifically.
All right.
And I had to be careful in terms of how I defined a pet. You know, it's something we take for granted, but if you take the idea of an animal in general and you start exploring at what point does an animal become a pet, I basically came up with this specific definition. A pet is a specific animal that apparently shares a mutually beneficial relationship with a specific entity or entities, usually augmented by a higher degree of control by the involved entity or entities. And I use that word entity or entities because, frankly, if you look back, say, through texts like the Bible, you could make a case for, say, the snake in Genesis being the pet of God, the pet of Satan, and the snake in Exodus being a pet of God, you know. So nonetheless, if you take the idea of a pet having some mutually beneficial relationship with an owner, shall we say, look how much we allow our pets to depend on us in life. We take care of all their primary needs, you know, food, water, health care, shelter. And then when they die, if there is some awareness there, well, they are completely lost in the spiritual form. They don't know what's happened. They don't know what's going on. Where are they going to go for an answer? They're going to come back to us, the owners. But at that point, however, if we are not receptive to the fact that they are there, well, then it's going to shock them even more because suddenly they're going to realize that we don't know that they exist. And this usually goes on for a week,